Great to have you along on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here. You know, there are a lot of guests I look forward to visiting with, and Paul Novak is close to the top of that list. And he's with me today. He's a great guy, and he also brings wonderful breads along with him. And so it's always a pleasure to have him here. The studio has got this wonderful smells of Ulekaka.
And part of it is the cardamom.
Yeah.
Or cardamom, however you want to say it.
Yeah. Yes. And we'll talk about that with him. You may have some baking questions or bread questions, or maybe you've got an experience to share regarding baking. I hope you'll join in. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. We'd certainly love to hear from you. And that Ulekaka is, I would look forward to that. And you bring it fairly often.
It's a fairly easy bread to make. I mean, it's just a basic, rich, somewhat sweet bread with cardamom in it and raisins.
Yeah.
And so I just get up early in the morning, make it, bring it here. Not as warm today as sometimes, but therefore it cuts better.
Yeah. Oh, well, and cardamom, what is it about cardamom then?
Well, I advise people not to get the jar of the powder.
Yeah.
You want to get it in the pods.
Okay.
And I learned even the pods will lose their potency over time. In Indian cooking, they use the black, but most people are going to use the green or the white.
Mm-hmm.
And it's easier to me to get it out of the white, which are bleached pods, as opposed to the green.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have to use a mortar and pestle, and it's some work to grind it up. Just realize that how much it tastes and or smells is related to how, you know, in a sense, how new it is.
Nice sensory experience, though, grinding those pods. Not the pods, but
yeah. And if you had a little tiny grinder, you know, it'd be faster. But but it does have oil in it, so it'd probably be a little hard to get it out of the grinder.
Yeah,
too.
You're better off with a mortar and
pestle
kind of thing. Well, there are a lot of people in Wisconsin who are of German descent, so I'm sure there are a lot of stolen recipes out there.
And of course, I'm Polish, so this is going to be a Polish stolen.
All right. Yeah. What's your favorite?
And all I do, and I'm not a fan of putting in a lot of fruits or nuts, so this is basically just a short dough, and I just put cinnamon sugar and roll it up. So it's pretty, you know, it's pretty basic. You really taste what the stollen is as opposed to all the ingredients. So many different countries make it. So this is my Polish stollen.
and there are hundreds of recipes for it.
But one thing interesting about it is it is a yeast bread or pastry, but you cut in my recipe, you cut in the shortening the way you would for a pie crust.
Oh.
So therefore, it's fairly short, and therefore you have a decision about what kind of fat you'd put in. I think Crisco is evil, but okay, that you know, trans fatty acids, et cetera, et cetera. So the traditional way would have been, I'm sure, lard.
Oh yeah.
And other people are going to use butter, or nowadays you could probably use coconut oil because it's also somewhat solid, and you could cut it in. But that's what's interesting about it. It's yeast bread, but it's got a lot of shortening, and in my recipe, you cut it in like you would with pie crust.
Some people call, some recipes call for marzipan in the center.
Yeah, if I can plug a Wisconsin Public Television show, the great, I don't know if it was the British one or the, or maybe it was even the, no, it was, I'm sorry, it was the inferior American version, which is not on PBS. But yes, they had a tube of marzipan through it. And I thought, what's that about?
but it's, it must be popular somewhere.
Yes. Yeah, so maybe there is a German style or a Serbian style or a Czech style that uses the marzipan, which is, it just looked odd to have this slice of sweet,
yeah, right in the
tubing right down the length of it. Yes,
the stollen is pretty dense bread.
Yeah, and it, but it, the way I make it, it cuts and it flakes. Not just because it's rolled up, but because of how you, in a sense, made it, even though it's a yeast bread.
I know with some of these, you've got something dense like that. Just knowing when it is baked through can be difficult.
Yes, yes.
And how do you do it?
You're going to have to just experiment because you can't always go by color, because if somebody's got a lot of shortening in it or eggs or sugar, those are all going to create color. So there are lots of breads where you just look at them and you think, oh, they're brown, but no, they're not done. So an instant read thermometer has its value to know what's that temperature right in the center.
I've got one that's a very expensive one. I'm even embarrassed to say how much I paid for it. But it really does the job.
Yeah, it's one of those handy tools. Yes.
And it's so accurate. I just love using it. So can you store that bread for very long?
Oh, because it's got so much shortening, yes, it'll last for a good week, and it'll start to dry out a bit, but it's...
What about freezing? Can you freeze it?
Oh, since you can freeze breads, you would be able to freeze that. When I make caramel rolls, you can freeze those and bring them out. They're not as good the next time, but they're,
still good.
They're good enough. Yes.
Good enough. Paul Novak, our guest today, he is the author of A Baker's Dozen of Daily Breads and More. And he's been teaching classes forever. And we were talking before the show, and his first time on the show was in 1989.
Yep.
Oh, my goodness. That's a lot of bread shows.
Yeah, yeah. There's that expression, time flies, huh?
Yeah, I guess it does.
When does the having fun part kick in?
Well, we always have. I'm having fun because I'm getting a chance to.
Yeah.
Oh, man. You can join in. You can have some fun, too. Join in with your own questions or comments about breads and bread making, or maybe you've got a great story to tell. I hope you'll join in. 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org, or you can post on our Facebook page, title, The Larry Mueller Show. And I always love to have people call in when Paul's on. Well, I like it for any show, but it's particularly nice because then while you're talking and asking your question or telling your story, I can be eating another piece of that bread.
Yes.
So that's the way I look at it. Mary in Menominee, thanks a lot for calling. What's on your mind?
Hi, Paul and Larry. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I usually make a lot of pizza dough in a year. And yesterday I made a batch that just was terrible. And I'm wondering, in winter when the air is dry, how much do you have to cut back on flour?
I always try to have the dough a little bit sticky if I can.
Okay.
So if the air is dry, you do want to incorporate less flour.
Okay.
So when I do the kneading, I'm trying to put in as little as possible of flour. So that when it's done, regardless, it's going to be a little bit stickier. Of course, this means in August it's going to be harder to knead because...
Right. So if the recipe calls for 3 1/4 cups, maybe start with 3 or 2 3/4?
I'd always say never believe the recipe anyways.
Okay.
Even if it's yours. Because of the variables. For example, the flour could have been drier when you got it from the store. How was it stored along the way? What was the moisture content of the flour? In other words, a cup of flour is, in Europe, they're going to weigh them, and that you avoid that whole issue. We tend to do it by volume, and therefore you have to adjust at the end.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. You can join in too, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page, The Larry Mueller Show. You know, another traditional bread that is made a lot in our area, at least, is Norwegian lefse, or just lefse.
Yeah, and I got my recipe from partly Norwegians and partly Swedes. So I'm not saying this is the... exactly traditional. And there's variations that don't have potatoes. Years ago, somebody called in about that. But you're essentially just making mashed potatoes. you know, or riced, mm-hmm. putting in what you would normally put into mashed potatoes. And, for you know, you could use leftovers. Therefore, my recipe has a little cream. Some don't. Mm-hmm. My recipe has some butter. Some don't. And then you'd put in a little salt and a little flour to bind it. You do it on an ungreased griddle, so it's essentially a dry potato pancake in a sense.
Yeah.
And then you roll it up, and then there's savory and there's sweet.
Once you've got that concoction, then you just roll it out with your roller.
Yeah, you roll it out with your roller. And years ago, a Norwegian, somebody from Norway, said that in Norway, they don't care how thin they are. He said, that's a Norwegian-American thing to think that thinner is better. But that is something people try to do, is get it thinner. You don't want it too thick, but... Yeah.
The thinners. And you know,
I don't know.
Why is it?
I'm not sure, because then it's harder to spread things onto it. So I.
Well, I tell you what, I really like left side. And especially if it's somebody's just made it, it's homemade.
Yeah, you can buy store bought and it's okay. But it's really the freshness. If somebody made it the day before or that day, it's going to be a little moister. And it hasn't dried out yet.
For those potatoes, for the ones that use potatoes, are there particular potatoes that work better?
I'd always go with russets.
Russets?
So, you know, if I'm going to think local here, I'm going to think, you know, Penzies for herbs, and I'm going to think a plover. The Stevens Point area grows a lot of potatoes, and they tend to be all, you know, russets. So that would be my choice.
And then in terms of equipment... You don't need a lot. You do need a ricer, probably.
I'll use a ricer. You could use a masher. But the griddle is, people tend, if they care, they get their dedicated Lefse griddle. You can adjust the temperature. It's electric. It's dry. You just put a little flour onto it. It can be big, meaning yeah. 18 inches yeah. in diameter.
And then in terms of topping, you don't put a lot of toppings on yours, do you?
I just put sometimes jam or sometimes, again, butter and cinnamon sugar.
That's mine, butter and...
And of course, I put cinnamon, nutmeg, and sugar. So that's my... And Penzies has Chinese, Vietnamese cinnamon, again, fresh. They have two different kinds of nutmeg. So, yeah, go into that store if you want an olfactory experience.
Oh, man. Man posted a photo of two beautiful Stolons that haven't gotten that up yet. It's on our Facebook page under our show posts. And let me see if I can... I'll find it. Oh, under visitor posts, probably. No, of course I'm not seeing it at the moment, but I will see it. I'll just remind you right now, we're talking with Paul Novak, baking instructor extraordinaire, about holiday bread baking and regular bread baking as well. So I hope you'll join in. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page, The Larry Mueller Show. Right now, taking a look at bread baking and bread making with Paul Novak, author of A Baker's Dozen of Daily Breads and More, and somebody who teaches a lot of classes. You've got a class, by the way, coming up in
January, Sourdough Breads with Madison College, Madison Area Technical College, it used to be called. Through their adult and continuing education group there. I pretty much do a class every year, either mm-hmm. sourdough or French bread or baguettes or healthy breads, you know, more whole grain.
And what's the course itself? You show how to make it and actually make some?
I make some, bring some in, and people can knead if they want to. But mainly they're just watching and picking my brain, and I'm just essentially talking for like 3 hours about bread and not being able to say everything anyways.
And then they eat a little of it after.
Oh, yes. All during it. Yes.
All during it.
Yes.
Kathy and Presque Isle, your turn. Thanks for calling, Kathy.
Hi. See, I have a question about checking the internal temperature of breads. I bake many different kinds of breads, and I've never checked with a instant read thermometer. So I have a couple questions. First of all, what kind of instant read is the most reliable if you could mention any kind of brand or type. And then what should the temperature be, or does it vary depending on type of bread?
It's somewhat going to vary depending on the bread or what kind of crust you want. I mean, if you want to go for a lighter crust, you're going to go for a lower temperature. If you're dealing with rolls, small volume and a lot of surface area, you know, a shorter bake time and a little more crucial. So for me, 180 to 200 degrees, that's quite a range. For internal temperature. One nice thing about instant read is if it's, say, a heavy rye bread, and you're not sure if it's baked all the way in the middle, putting that in and drawing it out will tell you if it's sticky right in the middle. So that's a real handy thing, that the fact that it's actually a skewer, and you can tell the feel of what's inside, not just the temperature.
And I am racking my brains to think of the name of the thermometer that I have, the instant read. And it was $100. It was about $98.
Yeah, and a lot of them, like at Orange Tree or other places, are going to be $10, $15, $20.
This one is right on the money. And I can't think of the name of it. Somebody else might maybe remind me.
And it's easy to calibrate them because you just boil water and put it in and see if it's 212.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And you can get one for a lot less than $100 for sure.
But it is one of those very handy tools, just like a dough scraper.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. All right. Thank you very much.
Yeah. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Let's turn to Kate in Brookfield next. Hi, Kate.
Hi there. How are you today?
Great. Appreciate the call. What's on your mind today?
So I make my great-grandmother's recipe for a kuchen, and it calls for a cake of yeast, and usually I make about 30 crescents of these for Christmas as Christmas gifts, and it's cake of yeast, butter, milk, and yeast, and what we have a hard time finding now is yeast, cakes of yeast, live yeast. The recipe calls for 2 cents worth of yeast, and now it's about $4 a cake.
Yeah.
Okay.
Do you bake from fresh yeast or from packaged?
I usually do what's called active dry yeast. I don't buy packages because it's not economical. It's better to buy it in a 4-ounce jar, or if you get it in bulk. But I'm glad you asked the question, because I knew somebody would. So I called up Red Star. I wanted to find out some of the history of this. You can get cake yeast in a few places. It's available in Madison. I just bought some. Up north, it might not be. Mm-hmm. It depends on the tradition in that area. They now sell it in a 2-ounce container. But when people, in old recipes, it said a penny's worth or 2 pennies worth. The odds are that they bought that from a bakery. And so, therefore, they bought a penny amount, but that didn't say what it actually was.
Yeah.
So the conversion that I use, and this is going to be different than Red Star because they think in terms of packets, which is 2 1/4 teaspoons, which is, to me, screwy to deal with. I deal in tablespoons.
Mm-hmm.
So it's essentially a 1-ounce cake yeast is approximately equal to a tablespoon of active dry. And they now sell it in 2-ounce containers, but that's like more than $3. And this recipe of this Ulakaka was 2 tablespoons. I could have used 2 ounces of cake yeast and spent $3 just on the yeast. But other people swear by it. It's an old recipe.
No.
It has a different feel, different texture, different taste, perhaps. So that's my feel. A tablespoon of active dry, approximately equal to 1 ounce of cake yeast. And it used to come in smaller containers, 0.6 ounces. So this confuses people, too, because that's less than 1 ounce.
Yeah, my brother lives in California. He cannot find cake of yeast, so I will recommend him to see if he can find those jars.
That's the dry, yes. But the cake yeast here, I found it at Metcalf's in Madison.
Yeah.
When I talked to Red Star, they also said it might be seasonal, meaning you might find it this time of year, but not somewhere else. And this store has it, that store doesn't. sort of random.
When I learned to make this, it was like a 4-ounce kind of rectangle yeast at one time. It was so big.
Yes, they used to sell four. They used to sell 4 ounces. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So but now it's 2 ounces. Now it's so it's smaller now.
Okay. Well, thank you. I will pass that on.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Just went on Facebook here, and Mamie has a beautiful photo here. She says, my neighbor surprised us with a loaf of this beautiful stolen bread. I've never had it before, and it was so delicious. And it really, you got a nice photo there, isn't it?
And that's what it tends to look like, usually a long loaf, and it's somewhat flat because it's got a lot of fat in it, so it sort of tends to slouch out. So when I roll mine with a egg white and cinnamon sugar mixture, the problem with that is it sometimes leaks out. So I would not make it in a patisserie. So
there we go. We have Lois from Gay's Mills looking for a kolache recipe. Her mother-in-law made this Czech bohemian food at the holidays, but nobody's ever had a recipe. It was a yeast bread with fillings in a triangle shape. The traditional fillings were prune and apricot. Hmm.
So I would just advise people to go to the library and look for ethnic cookbooks. There should be any of these here. I'm also looking at one of the comments saying my stolen sounds more like babka. And that's probably the case that, remember, I'm saying this is a Polish version of a stolen, so and not putting in a lot of fruit, not putting in a lot of nuts does change it a bit, yes. But it looks like a stolen, and my mother called it a stolen. So,
therefore, it is a stolen.
I don't know. Yeah, non-traditional, yes.
So Mike in New London suggests, oh, this is the thermometer, Thermopen. I think that's maybe the one that I use, Thermopen. As an instant read thermometer.
And if yours is off, you can hopefully just still deal with that. Meaning if it put in boiling water and it reads 200 instead of 212, or then
all right, you got to make the adjustment.
Maybe adjust.
Yep. So, by the way, how'd you get interested in bread baking all those years back?
My mother did not make bread, but she did. She was a wonderful pie maker. And at some point, partly it was the Tassajara bread baking book. And then I started making it I worked at Joseph's French Cafe, a legendary restaurant in Madison. And before that, Andrea's, which was the place that became L'Etoile, and started making bread for the restaurants and never stopped.
And been doing it ever since. Oh, man. Paul Novak, our guest. You can join in, too. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@WPR.org or post on our Facebook page, The Larry Mueller Show. You teach the bread baking, as I talked about. Is there one important thing that a student of it, never done it before, needs to know?
I suppose the thing is that it's an experiment, meaning this is food science, but it's also fun, meaning you do something and then you very carefully change the variables. So, for example, I often have people start with oatmeal bread because it's sticky and it stays together, and then you would play with the variables on that, figure out that bread, and go to the next one. But variables can be your oven temperature. They can be how the flour was stored, et cetera, et cetera.
It's interesting to me. I don't hear as much, and maybe I'm just not paying attention, but I don't hear as much about the automatic bread makers as, you think back 10 years ago.
There were years when that's all we answered questions about. Yes.
Was it, and I don't know if it's people are just returning to the old ways of doing it, or?
Or they figured it out. Some of the newer machines can do 100% whole wheat. Some people use them for the kneading process, then take it out and bake it in their oven. So those machines have their place too.
Yeah. Mike emailed to say the actual boiling temperature varies by atmospheric pressure and altitude. So at higher elevations in the state, it boils at 209, even less if it's a low pressure day. It's not a big deal, but don't blame the thermometer if it's off by a degree or two.
And nothing's that precise anyways, and I'm not even sure what the markings are on them, so 190 to 180 on those is a pretty small range. Yes.
Connie in Portage, hi, thank you for calling.
Oh, thank you. Good morning. My mother-in-law is long passed, and she used to make, she was German, and she made Kuchen all the time. And it was always Prunkuchen. And I can't find my recipe, and I can make the yeast bread just fine. But the topping, I can't remember if you put the prunes on the top, then put it in the oven, but there's a sour cream topping, and I wondered if anybody knew anything about that.
Well, if you put the prunes on the top, they're probably going to, I would guess, burn. I mean, if you have raisins sticking out of a bread, they're apt to burn on the top.
That's true, too. So you think after I take the bread out of the oven, you think I stuck that you put the prunes in then and then the sour cream topping?
Yeah, and if a sour cream topping would...
I think it was sour cream.
would probably also burn, so I would guess that's put on later. A lot of sugar glazes are put on afterwards. If people brush butter on, or you brush egg white or egg yolk or a whole egg to get a finish, yeah, that's done during the baking process.
No, there was no finish. It was just so good, and she was a gourmet cook, and of course I can't find the darn recipe.
Again, look in cookbooks. I mean, nowadays kids will go to the internet, but I'd still go to a.
I have tons of cookbooks. I love cookbooks, so I'll do that.
And go to the library because.
If you can't find it in your own.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you so much.
Yeah. Thanks so much for calling. In fact, you could call the librarian, and ask him or her for a specific recipe. I'm always amazed at how much fun it is to work with librarians.
And librarians like to be asked.
They like to be asked.
That is what they are not just trained to do, but they got into it because they like to. They like information. They like knowledge.
Yeah, and they like to help people.
Yeah.
So you might just try that, Connie.
I will. Thank you.
Thanks a lot for calling. Wenzel in Amherst up next. Hi, Wenzel. Thank you for calling.
Yes. Yeah, thanks for being on. I was wondering, I'm not a real baker. My wife is the one, but you go out and you get these kind of artisan breads that have that nice, real good crust and a soft inside.
Yeah.
And I wonder if that can be duplicated at home with, you know, mom and pop type ovens.
It's difficult.
And
a couple reasons. Some of those were probably done in a stone-lined, brick-lined oven. And if they were fired with wood, for example, wood has moisture and gives off moisture into the air. Some commercial ovens have steam injectors. So the common thing in a home oven is to put in a pan of water in the bottom or ice cubes or spray water in. I will actually brush the loaves with water during the process. So getting moisture into the oven is the trick, but it's hard to do at home. Now, you can apparently go and buy a German oven with a steam injector.
Yeah, they're out there. They're expensive.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you suggest just, you know, with a paintbrush or something.
Yeah, I put that on, during the process. Some breads don't need it. If you're making a rye bread, you're going to get a real crust, regardless.
And that would be done kind of midway through the process?
Yeah, and that's just my technique. Other people are going to spray into it.
So you might halfway through, you might start and then do it another time or two?
Yeah, I used to do it once. Now I do it twice. Make sure you don't get your bulb, with your if you're spraying.
Don't touch
so that. That's,
don't melt that.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, well, it's good advice. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Mary in Eau Claire up next. Hi, Mary.
Hi. I'm calling where's the lady that asked for the kolache recipe.
Yeah.
I have a kolache recipe. My grandparents were Czech, so this has been made usually always at Christmas and also at weddings and funerals. It was a very special one. If you make the entire batch, it makes like 14 or 15 dozen.
Wow.
Oh, my goodness.
And the dough is quite rich. It calls for a pound of butter and a cup of sour cream and four eggs.
Wow. So have you got that? You don't happen to have that online, do you?
No, I don't. I don't have internet at home.
Oh, okay. So what's all in it?
Well, it calls for 5 cups of flour.
Okay.
A pound of butter.
Wow.
A fourth of a teaspoon of salt.
Okay.
A cup of sour cream.
Cup sour cream.
4 eggs.
Oh, my gosh. 4 eggs.
And then you mix together yeast. It says a yeast cake, and I know there's been an issue about yeast cakes.
Yeah.
I just use regular dry yeast. And you do the yeast, 2 tablespoons of powdered sugar and a fourth of a cup of warm water.
Yeah. All right. I'm writing all this down.
And flour, what...
5 cups.
Five cups.
Okay. And how much did it say? How much cake yeast did it say?
It just says 1 yeast cake.
Okay. I with all that, I would probably do more than an ounce.
Yeah.
It's like this Ulakaka took 2 tablespoons of active dry.
Oh.
That would have been 2 ounces of cake yeast. I'm just guessing with all that sugar and butter and sour. I mean, it sounds delicious.
Oh, it does sound great.
Now, I have, sometimes when I make it, I'll make just a half a batch, and I just divide everything in half. But I use the same amount of the yeast and the powdered sugar.
Yeah, just to reference it, in my Ulakaka had 8 or so cups of flour, and it used to have a half a pound of butter, which I reduced the original, and this your recipe is 5 cups and a pound of butter and the sour cream. So
that's going to be really
and this
tasty.
Had 2 eggs, that had 4. So wow, that is really rich. So again, I would urge a little more yeast, but
we make all this. We mix it up the day before. It says to refrigerate it overnight.
That makes sense with all that shortening. Yeah. Yes.
And then when I roll it out, it's rolled out really quite thin. I cut them into small squares. I put a small amount of, I like poppy seed, almond, and apricot. Those are the only 3 flavors that I use.
Mm-hmm.
And they're family favorites. And then I put 2 corners together. I dab one with water. I put 2 corners together and fold it over. That way they stay in the shape.
Yeah, yeah.
And then they're baked in a 350 oven.
Oh. Tell you what, Mary, you should just come on down and make some of that for us, will you?
Yes.
Oh, no. I'd love to do it.
Yes. I tell you what, that sounds so good.
Yes, thank you so much for that recipe.
I'll try and send you some, Larry.
Oh, that'd be wonderful. Or just send me the whole recipe. I think I've got it all, but I'd love to see the recipe from you, Mary. And if you want to send some kolache, I'm certainly not going to be turning that away either.
It's always made for special events, Christmas and weddings and funerals and things of that nature.
Oh, and thank you so much.
You're welcome.
And Christmas breads, Easter breads tend to be high in eggs, sugar, fat, et cetera.
Well, we know everything is better with butter.
Yeah.
Oh, yes.
You're exactly right.
The Ulakaka has butter. I put butter in the lefse. I was going to say that stolen recipe, I use half lard and half butter.
Mm-hmm.
And again, and I wanted to tell people that you can now buy suet, and I've seen goose fat available in jars. These are also traditional fats for either frying or baking.
Where do you find them in the stores?
I found at Whole Foods. They're very expensive.
Are they refrigerated, or are they?
Once you open them, yes.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. There we go. Thanks again, Mary.
You're welcome.
And I should warn people, if they have recipes that call for poppy seeds, this is the oddest thing in the world. It took me a long time to figure it out. They are actually ground. There are special grinders to grind your poppy seeds, and then it works, meaning then you get a real paste. You would think they're so small, but that's the secret to poppy seeds. Grinding
solo
them.
Mix. It's quicker.
Thank you, Mary. Appreciate the call. I want to give Don and Eau Claire a chance. Don, hello. Thanks for calling.
For the lady who wanted cooking with plums and a moist topping on it, she should look in the dictionary for the Bavarian name for this, which is Zwitschendashi. Zwitschen, Zwitschen is the Bavarian word for plum, and then the last word is dashi, dashi. Zwitschendashi will give her the recipe for the kuchen with the sour cream and plum topping on. In my own family, I grew up with what was called Flaumkuchen. Flaum is another German word for plum, a more traditional word. And on that one, the plums were put on the yeast bread dough to start with, and it was baked at a 350-degree oven, and the plums were never burned at that.
Interesting.
And that, but Zwitschendashi is what she should look for, and it would be under Bavarian style cooking in a German cookbook.
Those would have probably been raw plums, though.
Yes, raw plums on the Zwitschendashi.
Because in a lot of these cakes, people would have been using dried fruit.
Yes.
But using the fresh, that makes sense that would last. Yes.
Thanks, Don.
Great idea.
Okay.
Yeah, appreciate the call. And Lynn and Eau Claire, your turn. Hi, Lynn.
Hi, Larry, and hi to your guest. I'm really enjoying the show today.
Thank you.
I'm a master baker, and a great place to find recipes, only you have to know what you're doing, is because our parents like to archive in church cookbooks or community cookbooks.
Yeah.
And one thing I found, my last name is very, very Polish and unpronounceable, and we make kolaczki, and we don't use yeast anymore. I have a recipe that uses powdered sugar, eggs, and cream cheese. And they're flaky, and they're delicious, and they barely make it out of the oven before my sons start the, at what temperature are they best? We don't have a plate of them.
Oh, man.
But just as a point of reference, church cookbooks are fun.
Oh,
and they're historical.
Yeah, they definitely. I have several.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, thank you, Lynn. Appreciate the call very much. And, Paul, I'm going to snatch one more piece of bread when you're on your way out, but I so much appreciate you. You know, here it is, 1989. Well, we got to go at least a couple more years to get 30 years in.
Yeah, it's not just that it's fun, but we learn things, too.
you can say that again.
And the transfer of information. I thank all the people who called in.
Yeah, thank you, Paul. And once again, you're teaching that class in for those in the Madison area. You're teaching a class on sourdough bread, January
something
in about mid January, I think it was. And so go to MadisonCollege.com, probably.
Right. Yeah, you can do all that online now.
Go to Madison College, and you'll get the information about signing up for that sourdough bread recipe. Thanks again, Paul.
Okay, thanks, Larry.
Paul Novak, baking instructor, author of A Baker's Dozen of Daily Breads and More. We're talking about lefse a little bit, and one of the stories in the December-January edition of Our Wisconsin has to do with lefse. So we'll probably talk about that article and a whole lot more with our next guest coming up, Mike Bino, editor of Our Wisconsin magazine, next on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.